This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
I thought after these two talks, which I thought were very, I think very useful, both the talks are very talks that all of us can identify with very, very much. You know, this is just not sort of philosophical stuff and lovely stuff to muse over and dream about. It's stuff that actually impacts on us very directly and personally. As I hope most of the stuff I talk about too, it tends to be the way I do things, is that I do talk very directly, and being very direct means it's very personal. It's stuff that you identify with. Hopefully you identify with all of these things. Otherwise, I'm not here to entertain you, and I'm not here to fill your heads with lots of stuff. So I thought I'd give you the opportunity. If there's any question, we could have a question and answer session. See how we get by with that today. If anybody's got any. Now, as we are recording, I might repeat the question just so that for the benefit of the viewers, whoever they may be. Might only just be me as I'm looking through it, trying to think of putting a subtitle in. Trying to compose a subtitle to be tacked on afterwards. So for my benefit, I might repeat the question.
This white cloud, did you say it's not an intellectual kind of thing, it's more something that you sense, or a physical sensation, or just some kind of sense?
It's the nature of the nature of the cloud. You want to know the nature of the cloud, how it could be described, as it were. Well, I think because we have because the nature of our training is that we do create this open environment, we don't tie ourselves down to a technique, we don't follow, you know, the countless forms of insightful avenues that you can follow with techniques and methods and imagery and mantras, and on it goes in Buddhism. We have an open forum. That cloud, you cannot sort of stick it in a specific box. But what I would say, how I would, I guess, describe my white cloud, is of course it does have an element of intellect with it. It's got to have, because that's a part of you, and your intellect has the quality, that usefulness of clarifying things for you, because we get clouded so easily, we get so confused, that sometimes we do simply have to sit down and think things through. Like, just think. Think of these concepts and sort of clear things away, so that we do get, it's like, in a way, it can clear a path for us. So we think, and that's just like a preliminary. It can remind us and take us back to that place. So that has its usefulness. But once it orientates, I mean, that's the way I would look at the intellect. It orientates us, because we can get lost and confused very easily. But that to me is its quality. Rather than think, as you can with this, that somehow it's the enemy, we've got to be careful about the intellect, because that's always taking us, that leads us into the ego, into attachment and all the rest of it. So therefore, we've got to sort of almost like make an enemy of our intellect and of our ability to to think and to formulate with those thoughts. But I think without using that faculty, what we do is that we use that faculty, but we treat it with great caution, because we know that it's taking us to the brink of just going into a conditioned way of thinking that always has got the self there somewhere, waiting to be a part of it, waiting to appropriate, turning the whole thing into an ego trip, basically. That's the danger. It's got a danger around it. But at the same time, we can't possibly imagine that we're going to live or do this practice without thinking, because that's just totally unrealistic, for one, because that's always going to be around. But secondly, because it's always going to be around, use it skillfully and use it for what it's for, and not get carried away by the dangers. So that white cloud has an element of conceptuality around it. So that possibly may not be there when you go into the insight, when you begin to look at it more intuitively. In fact, that's something that hopefully you let fall away. It takes you to that, takes you into that focus, into that space. It then falls away. And then from there, you can take things to the next level, if you like. You've got the thinking, and then you've got the pondering. Now, pondering, yes, that does also include, obviously, there are concepts, there are thoughts there, but there's a different quality with the pondering. How I would define the word pondering, anyway. First of all, that pondering has to take place in an environment of stillness. So just your normal everyday thoughts and all your busyness, you can't really ponder in those circumstances. Where you can ponder, like I encourage everybody to do so, is to find a space in your day where you just sit down and do nothing, where you go quiet, where you're not in formal meditation, but you learn to just come back into yourself, learn to quietly, in that quiet space where you're not caught up, where you're not busy, where you're not planning, where you're not becoming, where you're not after something, achieving something, where you've left all of those things behind, just your normal everyday world, your normal everyday activities. But retreat to that place that you can't say is like formal meditation, but it's almost there, where you can sit and you can ponder and you can talk to yourself. Not be caught with things out there, but just talk to yourself. Say hello to yourself. Begin to make friends with yourself. Be positive with yourself. To see how you're getting on. To actually recognise, you know, there is a part of you that isn't, you're experiencing for that while, where you're not caught up and just off chasing things all the time, but where you are really coming back into yourself and you're just turning over thoughts, maybe in a very, very quiet way. They're there, but they don't have a lot of solidity about them. They're transparent, and they sort of merge with that part of you that isn't the thinking part of you. So you can turn over and you're in a place of contemplation, but also you're in a place of insight. It's not the depth of insight, but it's a place where this whole practice is about getting to know yourself. And to whatever skillful means is helping you to get to know yourself, and if you can do it throughout the whole of your day, that's the path. The path is about getting to know yourself. It's not something that you restrict to the cushion, as some would like to do with all these great techniques. Yes, of course, but also getting to know yourself throughout the rest of your day, so that you get to see yourself, you recognize yourself, you see the way that you're caught, the way that you chase, the way that you react, what you like and what you don't like, and how this whole mechanism is at play all the time, getting to see that, getting to know that, that is like the crudest, on the outside of the white, of the white cloud. But then you begin to step in, and as I say, you get to the, you can get to the pondering part, where you create an environment where you're still, where you're not distracted, where you're not caught up in your worldly activities, where you can ponder, look at yourself. Oh, hello, how are you? I haven't seen you today. I've been so running here, there, running there. How are you getting? How are you feeling today? How are your feelings? Are you feeling okay? Are you feeling stressed? Are you feeling happy? Are you sad? Well, it's nice that, you know, it's nice that we can have a little chat together here, and you know, and then you can stroke yourself and be nice to yourself. A little bit of pampering, you know, like you go into one of these parlours where people pamper you, and you sit there and people fuss all over you. You have time to fuss all over yourself with yourself, so that you can make connection with yourself, because a lot of the time we're not connected with ourselves. This is why we suffer, because we're so estranged from ourselves. But learning to, this is all part of, you know, what I like to call the white cloud, is that is an element of insight. Because if you're seeing yourself and getting to know yourself, and you're beginning to reveal yourself, that is insight. You're seeing and you're getting to know yourself. That's the path of insight. It's not like our clothes, black and white. There's all sorts of degrees through our daily life, through our life, that we can use so that we can actually be on the insight path the whole of our day. It's called knowing yourself. When you walk, know your walk, and when you sit, know your sitting. And you're getting to know yourself. That's the white cloud. So you're having that ability to reflect and to get to know yourself. What you do with that knowledge, with that vision, that's something else. But at least you're beginning to open up to yourself and getting to know yourself. And all of that becomes possible because you're nurturing that ability to reflect through awareness. And awareness is a characteristic of your blue sky. It is to whatever degree it may be, however still, however open, undisturbed it may be, as long as you've got some element of awareness. And awareness means that you can be with yourself, find that stillness, and begin to look at yourself. There you are. You are touching, as I like to call it, was not only me who calls it. You're beginning to touch what ultimately is your sky-like nature, as it's often called. That part of you that's still. That part of you where transform, where you begin to see yourself, where the whole world that you create can start to go into change. And without that sky-like mind, that stillness, that awareness, any sort of change becomes very, very dubious, that in fact it's only something moving the furniture around, deceiving you that you're on this insightful path, whereas you, in fact you're just manoeuvring things around. It's when you come to that spacious part of you that is not a part of that conditioned world, where authentic change can begin to take place. And in that place is where you'll find the white cloud. So you have that awareness, and then you can begin to, as I say, reflect upon yourself and get to know yourself, because that's all this business is about, is knowing yourself, is waking up to who you are and how you construct yourself. And when you see that, you can then begin to deconstruct it or let it go. So you have the thought, which is at the crude end of the spectrum. You can then move into pondering, which is much quieter, which requires a specific environment. And the quieter the environment, the better. But your pondering has a different quality than the experience you have when you're on the cushion, and you can pick that, and it's more of a a free open forum. You don't have to concentrate, but just learn to still relax and be with yourself. And that is, that can be, it sounds a great place to be, but that can be an enormously challenging place. And so many people just couldn't be still and be and let go of their becoming, let go of this conditioning of always achieving, always doing something, always being busy. But actually, let go of the busyness. For a lot of us, would be an absolutely terrifying prospect, and something that, never mind not being able to meditate, we can't even sit still and be a little bit quiet with ourselves. Because what you begin to see when you're still, when you're quiet, is that you begin to see yourself. That's what's terrifying or frightening, even terrifying, is that you begin to see something, bits of yourself, that you spend most of your life cleverly avoiding by being busy, by being out there, by chasing this and chasing that. All of these, whether you realise it or not, is a way of avoiding yourself. But when you come to the Dharma, you've got to give up avoiding yourself, because otherwise you're wasting your time. This is about not avoiding yourself. It's about learning to be with yourself. So even pondering, which I say sounds lovely, just to be quiet for a time and let all your worldly busyness go, that in itself can be very cheap. Just to sit there and have a spirit of not doing anything and see how long you can keep that going for before the mind is going off and is planning what something that you've got to do that you've not finished, that you've some achieving, something or other. And the frustration of sitting there doing nothing, the art of doing nothing, is something that defeat is so difficult to pull off. Even though, you know, try it. Well, I hope you do try and see how there's a part of you that doesn't want to ponder, that doesn't want you to be still, that doesn't want you to be in a mode of not becoming, of not achieving, that just be there and just be with yourself. So, I don't know. Isn't it nice and peaceful? Isn't it nice just to have a little bit of a breather, a little bit of a break, just so I can... just to be with myself and find myself and catch up with myself. How that can be challenging. But that's a part of the white cloud. That's not exclusive. The white cloud isn't a profound thing. It's something that contains many, many different perspectives. But, like I said yesterday or the day before, and what I say, you cannot have a white cloud without a sky. A cloud needs a sky. So there always got to be an element of awareness, of stillness, some sort of space, whatever degree of spaciousness you can find within yourself. When you come into your awareness, you're touching that place that's not a part of the conditioned world, is not a part of me, but is a part of something that is an opening, is a touching, is a coming in contact with something that has no limits. It is limitless. And to touch it, and just to create just a little bit of a sky, if you like, however murky it may be, however unblue it may be, it's still, you're getting there. And there, with that cloud, with that sky, then a cloud can appear, and you can use that cloud. So you have those degrees, and then you then take it to a more refined degree, which is something that invariably you will only do on the meditation cushion, and from there you most definitely do deliberately with our training, deliberately. Evoke, discover that spaciousness within us, which reveals itself when we let go of our attachments to our thoughts and our busyness and the pictures and all the self-identity that comes about when these things come to our experience. When you let them go, you don't create anything. You discover what is there and is waiting to be discovered, rediscovered. Beyond this turbulence is that spaciousness. And the more that spacious, that stillness you can cultivate and bring to your to your sitting, the more that you sit and the more you commit yourself to letting go of your attachments, and you make the decision whether you let go or not. You let go of those, the more you let go, the more spaciousness you will discover. You will discover your true nature. That's your true nature. You're beginning to make contact with what is the real, what is the unconditioned. And from there, the more that you can have this, the steadfastness of this experience, you can then begin, again, use the metaphor of a characteristic of the white cloud. That openness, that spaciousness, that clarity, that no-thingness is not something dead, is not a dead object, is not a piece of wood, it's not just not... It has vitality. And if you can bestir yourself, it has the ability to see and to know. It's got wisdom, it knows. It is the knower. It is not just a blue sky, but it's a sky that knows. It's the knower. All wisdom is within that experience. And for us it's in a sense, in one sense, it will rise on its own, and it will see and know things as your personality, and bits of your personality will invariably come along. Things that want to take you away from that experience of openness, but because you've got some experience and steadfastness, you don't lose it, but at the same time, you can retain, you can allow this habit that's come to you to be there, and you can begin to look at it without being carried away by it. And the more steadfast you are, the more you can stay with something so that it doesn't pick you up and carry you as it's done in the past. That self-identity is not there, so therefore you don't attach to it. So that phenomenon, whatever it may be, something very precious, something you're very familiar with, something that sits on you all day long, that affects your life, diminishes your life, can come to you, can show itself in that environment. And there, because you've nurtured this ability to be still and not be carried by it, you've given up the self-identity for a little while, because there is no self in that openness. This is not the realm of the self. You cannot have the self and that no-thingness in the same place. There is no self, but what there is there is the potential for great clarity and great seeing. Nothing to do with you as a personality. That's inherent within the blue sky. So that you can learn to stay and not lose that blue sky. And then when a part of you inevitably will come along, or something will come along, it gives you the ability to look at it, to look into it, and get to know it without being carried away by it. And then you can really penetrate, and you can really look. Once you become established, you can really begin to look and get to know this without being carried away by it, so that it becomes something that you observe from a distance, but you can get very intimate and still not lose yourself, still not lose that clarity, not lose that ability to look and look at it. What is this? What is this thing that possesses me, that identifies me, that I can't let go, that is it's got to be so precious to me, I can't even throw it away, even if I want to. It's something so intimate. What is it? And look at it and know that this is causing you suffering. This isn't great joy and wonder. This is suffering. discover why you suffer. Look at it. This thing that you are convinced is real, that it's you as a part of you, that it becomes something big in your life, that it defines you as a personality, it helps to define you. And yet, it's suffering because it's not something that you can control, that you can put down when you feel like it. It's something that engulfs you and diminishes you, and you feel wretched, and life becomes diminished because of it. To be able to have that steadfastness, to be able to not be taken by it, but allow it to be there and to get closer and look inside there, not with the self, there's no self, but with that part of you that knows, that part of you which is a feature of that open blue sky, that you can begin to look, you can begin to investigate, turn over, look for this person. I'm talking personally here, how it's worked for me. Look for, where is this person who this is a part of? Where is, whatever his name was at the time? Look for it and see this solid thing, this solid entity, actually isn't a solid, or is it a solid, that you are convinced is a solid entity, that is fixed and it's, you could sort of virtually bounce it on the floor, it's so concrete. Look into it and see that it's just forces that are in a flux, that are just flowing this way and that way. That's not how I perceive me. I perceive myself as a solid, undeniable entity. I never question myself as, or consider myself to be just something that's flux, in a flux that's flowing this and that way, but something that's solid. And look for that solidity and discover the nature of that, that it isn't like that. And there's all sorts, you can look at the impermanence of the thing, which is what that is doing. And seeing impermanence means that there is no, you will not find a fixed person. But it's just a series of conditions that are flowing, and yet I see it as something quite different. I misinterpret that experience to be something that then becomes my suffering. That's going into making use of that blue sky, having that established, and then having this fantastic toolkit. Stick it under your shoulder, under your arm like this. And then when it comes, go in there and look and have a fantastic time of unpicking it, of seeing it, of just dispelling the whole fantasy that you've always imagined it to be, the thing that you've always imagined and that you've been absolutely caught by and been imprisoned to because you think it's this. Now, because you bring stillness and you bring that part of you that's not a part of that world and that experience, you invite it, you allow it to come into that experience, that thing of immense wisdom, of knowing. You allow it to come in, to shine into it, to look into it, and to see the truth of it. And when you see the truth of it, you start to pull away from it. You don't go there, you let it go. And then the thing, you no longer reinforce it, and the thing falls away. And that's how I, for my own personal experience, that is how much of the whole path of insight would unfold, and it's just one thing after the other. But it's all coming, but you've got to have the environment right. You've got to have the environment, and you've got to have the box of tools to be able to know what to do with these experiences when you create the right environment. How you then, it's then not like, it's not something of being passive, but it's something very, very dynamic that you then engage yourself with, so that you begin to unpick the whole deception that you've been caught by all of your life. So that's how I would describe the white cloud. Something of different levels. And the thing about the white cloud is that it's not the property of certain of an exclusive type of person. We can all do that, because we can actually start with thought, and we can actually have dharmic thoughts and positive thoughts and thoughts that lead back into ourselves, not take us out there, that bring us, that orientate ourselves, that encourage us to practice the Dharma and to stay with what we've started and not give up. All of these things, they're all tools in the tool bag. They're all helping you to get to know yourself. And they're infinite. But they've all got to come, they all got to have that characteristic of reflecting it. We don't do out there, we do in here. That you turn and you reflect, you open, you get to know yourself. And in getting to know yourself, you open up that whole world that you can then investigate and get to know, so that you're close and intimate with it. And there, the whole process, we call it change. That's how we imagine that something goes from this to this. But it's even more subtle than that. Because ultimately, we're already there. We're not making it. It's like a dream. You wake up. You know, what is a dream made of? How can you label a dream? What is a dream made of? You know, and yet when you're in the dream, it's as real as anything. It's so real at the time. And then in the morning you wake up and you found that you haven't been canoeing down the Amazon without saving all these beautiful women or whatever you're doing, and fighting all these crocodiles and piranha and stuff that you've been absolutely convinced that you've been doing all of this time. That in fact you wake up and realize, oh blimey, I've never even left my bedroom. What a letdown. And then you realize, oh, it was just a dream. And you realize that actually, throughout that dream that's taken you all around the world, you've never left your bed. And this is exactly the same. You wake up. There are not material things involved with this at all. This whole path of insight, it's just seeing the dream that you've created for yourself, the delusion. And in fact, you've always been there. You've always been in your bed, if you like. You've never left it, and yet you're convinced that you've been round. Not that you've been round. I mean, that would be great if you could go around and do all that, have all these fantastic adventures. But the unfortunate part about it is that so much of it is suffering. If it was all bliss, then fantastic. But what we create for ourselves, and you see that you do create everything, but what you create for yourself is something that diminishes you, that makes you, that takes away your potential, that puts you in a little box, and you're in there and you suffer. It's called dukkha. That's the unfortunate thing about the dream. If it wasn't like that, then dream on. But that's the unfortunate thing with it. that's the nature of it is that it's suffering. That's the characteristic of the dream that we create, that we then get lost in, that we take to be real, and then that's why we suffer. But there's a part of us that never sleeps, and we live out of that. We never leave it, and it's always here and now. Past and the future is a part of the dream. No such thing as past and future. There was only this moment. And to wake up to this moment, when you truly wake up to this moment, then there is no dream. And that's the path of it. And that's becoming free, that's going beyond suffering. Nobody wants to suffer. This is when we fulfill our human potential, which is something we carry so much humanness, so much potential within us that is incalculable what it can do in the world of suffering. But we are so caught up in ourselves that we don't even access it. We're so concerned about me that when we can let this me thing go, this amazing goodness will flow of its own volition. That's the human heart. That's the human condition. That's the full human potential. It's not about enlightenment. It's that, but it's about the warmth and the love that's with us all. It's not a part of me. It's not me. All of this comes to be when we learn to use the box of tools in the right environment. And that's how I would describe the white cloud. And you've got your white cloud. This is a thing to remember. This is not the preserve of those that are great meditators. You've got a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom and knowledge and stuff, that they're the ones that know. We all have a white cloud, and we most certainly all have a blue sky. That much we got. Even the most ignorant person's got a blue sky.